Welcome to the Modern Yogi Podcast. An exploration of ancient wisdom.
Hello, hello, everyone.
Welcome back to the Modern Yogi Podcast. We are on episode number
132.
Nice. Oh my God. We sound like sweet cherub angels. Oh my that goodness. Was great. We are on chapter 18 of the Bhagavad Gita, and we are on text number 29.
And what's your name?
My name is, hola. Soy Asta. Sueno como pasta. My name is Shama Sangeeta.
She's practicing her Spanish.
I'm learning Spanish.
My name is Priyadarshini.
And I'm Shamali.
Nice. So last episode was, a lot of riddles. Krishna's testing us to really if we're actually paying attention to this whole book because he's writing all of his verses in riddle form. But it's cool. We got it.
We figured it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was especially two verses that I think I would have had a complete meltdown if I were Arjuna and you're about to fight and Krishna starts speaking like that. It's like, oh my God, please just say it. Just
tell me what it is. Just tell me what to do.
Yeah. Anyways, where are we now, ladies? Where did we leave off? What were we talking about?
Well, we talked about, okay, sorry, guys.
Go ahead.
We talked about knowledge. That's all I was going to say. And action. knowledge and action and the worker and the three different modes.
Exactly. We're connecting different things that we've heard of before and now talking about them in relation to the three modes. So action in the three modes, workers in the three modes. And we left off on the lazy worker that no one wants to hire. And it's interesting, the mind, right? Because the mind is like a perpetual procrastinator. It postpones all the results of our resolutions we want to do to someday, and then that becomes some decade. And then eventually, maybe for some, it becomes some life, like a whole life will have passed and we didn't do what we wanted to do for ourselves. So text 28 was all about the worker.
Okay, so shall we move forward?
The invocation, please, ladies.
Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Shakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Gracias. Translation. I was born in the darkest ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto them.
Me and Shamali were in this like meditative mood, and you're like, gracias. Okay, moving on.
Okay. I have to throw a wrench in there sometimes. Next time I'm going to be like, la invocation, la por favor, amigas.
She's very excited with her Espanol.
I'm like going very wild. Okay. Alrighty. All right. We are on chapter 18, text number 29, Priyadarshini.
O winner of health, now please listen as
one more time. Winner of wealth.
Oh, did I say health? Whoopsie daisy. Also Krishna speaking, yes?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Cool. O winner of wealth. Hey, health is wealth. And I'm going to start over.
and from the top.
Take three. O winner of wealth, now please listen as I tell you in detail of the different kinds of understanding and determination according to the three modes of material nature.
Okay, this is fun because we about knowledge in the three modes. We talked about action in the three modes. We talked about the worker. And now we're talking about understanding.
And determination.
And determination in the three modes. Yeah.
Okay, let's get to it. Text 30th. Yes. Shamasangita.
Okay, Krishna says, O son of Pritha, that understanding by which one knows what ought to be done, what ought not to be done, what is to be feared, and what is not to be feared, what is binding, and what is liberating is in the mode of goodness. Okay, so this is essentially, Krishna is saying that if you have understand the tenets of this book and the main themes of this book,
right,
then you are in the mode of goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could you, I think it could also be said about, do you think it could be extended to not bhakti yoga, but just kind of like the right thing to do
like a moral code.
Yeah, like more of a moral
absolutely.
Thing because it's mode of goodness and that can, mean more so like material entanglement still.
But also Krishna gives us the moral code in that chapter called Divine and Demoniac Natures, right? He gives us a moral code of what characteristics we should be developing in our life, right?
For sure.
Right. So that is,
I think it could be both. This could be for a very pious person who's not necessarily in bhakti, but operates a very mode of goodness lifestyle. And then in their next life, who knows, is elevated further, connects to devotees. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it can, it can extend. Like when I was thinking about it, I was thinking it can extend to someone who's like, I know not to be unkind to others, mm-hmm. or to cause suffering to others, or like I would be, you know, like that kind of general judgment would is good. But then also a higher level of that would be to know that this is, you know, we should cherish our lifetime right now because we are in this consciousness, mm-hmm. of this body and this soul, and we're not the body, and we want to transcend the situation, and we want to go back to Godhead, and you know, like that's, you know.
Yeah, I do think that like this is a little bit more than just the good moral code, right? Because this person also knows what is binding and what is liberating. Mm-hmm. And there's not a lot of spiritual paths besides, you know, Buddhism and bhakti yoga that kind of talk about this notion of binding and liberating.
Yeah, I could see that.
Fascinating.
Text 30, 31, and 32 are about buddhi, the understanding for action.
Okay. Well, text 31, Shyamali.
O son of Pritha, that understanding which cannot distinguish between religion and irreligion, between action that should be done and action that should not be done, is in the mode of passion.
Ooh, no purport.
No purport. It's just like, mic drop, it is what it is.
It is what it is, yeah.
Okay. So is Krishna basically saying, hey, Arjuna, if you can't figure out, if this person cannot figure out what the right thing to do is, what is religious things and non-religious things, and they don't know what they're doing, mm-hmm. this is understanding in the mode of passion.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And like you said yesterday, Priya, wouldn't it be nice to have Krishna talking in our ear throughout our whole lives, being mm-hmm. like telling us exactly what we need to do?
Honestly, I wish I was born with it on this, like a stamp on my head when I was a baby.
Literally. You know?
Wouldn't that be so easy?
Amazing.
Wouldn't that be like great?
I wonder, what do you really think it would be easy to get okay, let's say you got a piece of paper. You're born. This is your name. These are the things you should do in this lifetime to go back to Godhead.
I would love that, actually. But I mean, maybe not one. Maybe here are your five choices of occupation and things that you need to do and how you need to be. You can pick and choose any mutation of any of those options that I gave you. Have fun. But I think it would be so much better than running around with a chicken with your head cut off and trying to figure it out yourself.
But technically, the spiritual list is here. Mm-hmm. So the only part we're missing is the material thing. Like, we don't really know how to be... Like what to do materially?
Yeah.
Like maybe more detailed, specific scenarios. Like big brush strokes, we know what to do. But it would be nice to have someone holding your hand through life and just being like, "Look, this is the situation. Talk to me. Detailed, chronologically, step by step, what to do. Don't miss anything, please."
What would you want to know?
Ooh.
Everything.
occupation. The right, like even before this podcast started, like what was the right service for me? And like, occupation was
like
a big
one. Like which path to take in terms of, there's so many choices, even in services, there's so many ways to tap in and so many things that you can do. I don't know which one's the right fit for you.
But it would make it a little boring if it's stamped on a baby's head.
Right.
Oh, another accountant.
What would be nice rather than like them, Krishna telling me exactly how my life will play out, more so having him, like Arjuna's going through a crisis and Krishna's there to guide him, like for crisis moments or even just any moments you want, being like, time out. Ooh. I need to talk to Krishna for 1 second.
If there was like a little, you know, when you go to a hotel and they're not at the desk and you hit the little
ding, ding, ding,
yeah, ding, 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 ding,
emergency,
ding, 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 ding,
emergency.
I need your help now, Krishna. That would be great.
That's
ding, ding,
so
ding.
Funny.
Yeah, that would be cool. That'd be cool.
So that would be cool.
Not like he'll tell me exactly. That would be boring if you know exactly how your life will play out. But more so, once you're in whatever scenario. Now let's talk, please, Krishna.
Do you think that in those situations, maybe try to think of one of those situations in your life, okay? Picture that first. Mm-hmm. Do you think that you could take a second to be like, if Krishna was in front of me, what would Krishna say to me in this moment?
Mm-hmm. Like, what would Jesus do?
Basically.
Are you saying that if we thought about it, Krishna would tell us the answer? Or?
Like, if we know where Krishna stands in a lot of things, right?
Do we? How is he supposed to tell us what we're supposed to do for a living?
Well, that's the thing. It is hard.
Why
because
would he want
if
to?
I was Arjuna, let's just pretend we're Arjuna for a second. I'm without Krishna there, I might think the answer's clear. don't kill my family.
Mm-hmm. No, because if you, I mean, you've read the Mahabharata. I have not fully. So, you know,
I listened through the Audible.
There you go. Which I still think it's funny because I introduced it to the Audible and then
you
I didn't finish
it yourself. No.
And then she introduced it to me. And so we both have listened to the Audible.
Oh,
and
my God. Have not.
And I started this trend and I have, oh my goodness.
It's actually really good.
Actually, can you plug it for a second? Just tell people what we're
talking
about.
Good. It's very good.
If you go, I have to look it up for a second. Let me check.
Look it up. So what she's looking up is actually the audio version of the entire Mahabharata, mm-hmm. which is literally all of the events that have led up to this war. And it gives you so much context.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So basically you just go on Audible and you type in Mahabharata, the greatest spiritual epic of all time. It is by Krishna Dharma and narrated by Sarvabhavana Das. So, and I think if, I don't know if you guys had to pay for it. I know I gave it to you for free, Shamali. I don't know if you
had
to pay
for it, but I think it's completely worth it. If you just need to
it's
get
like
an Audible.
10, 12 bucks
I have
or something.
A subscription. So every month you get a credit and then you can use it towards that.
Yeah. Okay. It's totally worth it. Cause it's
anyways.
Like a million hours long, but it takes you through and it's actually really entertaining.
It's very good.
It's like,
it's very
it's
good.
Not dry. It's a little juicy.
It's
actually.
Very juicy.
It's
very
supposed
very
to be like
juicy.
A dramatic reading of it. It's not like a, it's like a storytelling, not
yeah.
quite just reading.
It's a little spicy if I'm going to be honest. And and that kept me engaged the whole time.
I would love a montage reel of all the parts that caught Shama's attention.
I know.
All in one.
We would know what they are.
There's a lot of spiciness in the Mahabharata and I didn't know. And so, yeah.
Anyways, back to what we were saying.
Oh yeah.
I think, you know, if you look back, like Arjuna tried everything else before the battle.
Yeah.
He found, you know, they all decided to do all the peaceful, even when they were treated poorly, they didn't retaliate, right? At every step of the way. So Arjuna knows what the right thing to do is because, you know, he's in the mode of goodness. He knows what right and wrong is. So even though he might be feeling a lot of emotions and maybe uncertainty, he still knew that he had to fight that battle.
Did he though?
I think
he showed
confused.
Up. His army's there. They're like standing in the battlefield.
He was
he
freaking
show Krishna.
Up. Yeah. He showed up, but he was freaking out.
But then he put his weapon down.
He did put
for
his
a
weapon
second.
Down.
He just freaked out for a second, but he knew what the right thing to do was.
I mean,
and again, Arjuna is a perfect example of a perfect person. Again, we are not comparing ourselves
true.
To
that's
Arjuna.
True. No, no, no. God, no. Well, no, no, no. no, no.
But that's what being in the mode of goodness is. I think you kind of know what the right thing is, you know?
But yeah. Whereas if you have understanding in the mode of passion, you don't really know what the right thing to be done is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think until Krishna is talking to us face to face with the maybe the areas you have advisors, you, mm-hmm. if there's people, spiritual masters, I don't know. Senior
parents.
Devotees, parents, people around you that you can
friends.
Ask,
yeah.
talk it through.
Totally. Yeah.
And I think the key message for us is to make sure that we put our understanding in the mode of goodness. And mm-hmm. that means like constantly learning and constantly educating ourselves and reading more books and reading this book over and over again. Right.
Yeah.
And so like continuing to put ourselves in the mode of goodness when it comes to understanding is like constantly being a lifelong learner.
Yeah. We were just saying before filming that Priya said probably if we went back to the very beginning and read this over again, it might be totally different than the first time around.
Oh, yeah.
It's the book that at every single stage you maybe take something else out
something
of it.
Something different, something new.
Yeah. It's the book that keeps on giving.
There's a one-liner here for this verse that in some ways is more complicated, but it opens for discussion.
Okay. Sure.
Interesting, right? I know. It says, we're on text 31, right?
Yep.
Just double checking.
Yeah,
I just wanted to double check. Okay. Intelligence in passion misjudges duty and a dharma.
Confused. I thought you were done. Sorry.
Okay. A dharma or one's dharma?
No, a dharma.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry. Okay, intelligence and passion misjudges duty and a dharma, confused by material desires. So it kind of adds on, right? So the material desires are the things that make it so confusing to make the right or wrong choice.
Mm.
And it's interesting because sometimes we think of mode of passion, I think of like anxiety or like, you know, moving a lot and you're just, you know, overly active, hyperactive, whatever, those things. But in this case, I think passion also is greed, right? Because we were talking about a lot of the mode of passion is like when you... for a lot of these verses, when we talked about mode of passion was like following like demons who are greedy and want this or that. So it's actually about wanting things in the world and getting confused by material desires that makes you make poor choices.
That's true.
Which I thought, whew.
This is quintessential mode of passion. Yeah.
Right.
Very
interesting. It's
interesting
how the Gita has more in-depth explanations of things like lust we've talked about before isn't just... sexual desires. Right. Lust can be much, it is much broader.
It's just desire.
Yeah.
And you know, you can have lust for food and for things and for mm-hmm. so many things. Yeah. So.
Okay. 32. Right.
32 Priya?
Yeah.
Okay, Priya.
That understanding which considers irreligion to be religion and religion to be irreligion under the spell of illusion and darkness and strives always in the wrong direction, O Partha, is in the mode of ignorance.
Okay, so understanding in the mode of...
Let's break it down.
Yeah, understanding of the mode of... Okay, wait. Basically, understanding in the mode of ignorance is literally upside down world. You literally think that good things are bad and bad things are good.
Yes.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
That religion is the opposite, that... Yeah,
yeah, you're under the spell kind of desire and darkness and Maya.
Illusion.
And illusion, yeah.
Wow, fascinating.
Upside down world.
I wonder, like, every time we read some of these, I'm like, do I know anyone like that? Can I understand that perspective? Can I understand that mindset? What does that look like? It's so curious and interesting.
I think it's really deep-seated atheism where you're really you're practicing atheism where it's like you are holding demon worship workshops out of your house. I don't know.
That's so extreme.
That's not what we believe. But you know what I mean? But you think that that is right, right? Mm. Where it's like harming others or like voodoo ceremonies or things that actually harm other people where you think that that in your heart is the right thing to do.
Right.
When it's like literally the opposite of spirituality.
Yeah. I also think it has to do, it could also be outside of religion. It could also be like, you know, how women are supposed to be protected and respected. And like, that was always the case. Like Arjuna protected his mother and his wife and always, you know, that's how they led very principled lives. I think it could also be like how women are treated nowadays where it's like not respected, not, you know, whatever. I'm not saying that that's the only thing, but just like a modern day example of like, upside down world where like things are not valued the same way.
That's true.
Like even morality, being honest, sometimes people are like, oh, you're too foolish. You got to, you know, be whatever.
More cunning. And,
more cunning and more to strive to get this or that or whatever. Yeah. But
it's literally the opposite of everything that we're supposed to be doing in the mode of goodness.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Text 33, Shama.
All right. Krishna says, O son of Pritha, that determination which is unbreakable, which is sustained with steadfastness by yoga practice, and which thus controls the activities of the mind, life, and senses, is determination in the mode of goodness. Ooh. Okay, so now we're talking about determination in the mode of goodness.
Right. Yeah, texts 33, 34, and 35 are about dhriti, determination for action.
Mm.
I love this because I think this is really hard.
Yeah,
I think like, I mean, at
in least, what sense?
Because I think being so determined that you that you're steadfast is a challenge in society,
right? Yeah, totally.
And I love that it's like you can do this by yoga practices, which I think that's really interesting. And then it helps you control the mind and the life and the senses, and that's mode of goodness. I think that's like really lovely and ideal. Like whereas other ones, mode of goodness, I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. I can do, you know, like I have a rough good idea of, you know, the right thing and the wrong thing to do. I can see this one being like the steadfast part. It's like still a work in progress.
Is hard.
Yeah. And I think that like, as we get deeper into Kali Yuga and life gets so hard, right? And we all go through ups and downs. Determination, which is unbreakable, is something to strive for.
For sure.
Because there are days where you're like, oh, Krishna, really, really going to throw this at me now. And so that unbreakable determination is something that is difficult, but we need to put that as one of the things that we need to strive towards, especially if the goal of our life is like preparing for that final exam and remembering Krishna at the time of death, then determination is the only thing that will get us there because that will be our practice.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. And I think it's interesting too, as I read the purport, Prabhupada says yoga is meant to be understood as the supreme soul. So I think we might think like, oh, it's like breathing exercises and practices like this, but it's actually bhakti yoga.
Yeah.
You know, meditation,
right?
On
like
the
this
holy name.
Longer process of developing this relationship with Krishna. Not to say that you can't use yoga practices to help steady the mind, to help, you know, these things, but
I mean, exactly. That was the whole purpose of the yoga system. It was a system where we start with body movement so that we can slow down, steady the mind, and then focus inward on understanding the supreme soul.
Yeah, the way that I interpret yoga practice is like, it is Krishna, but it is like chanting Krishna's names every day.
Like,
right?
Japa.
Yeah.
It's like sadhana.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Nice. Text 34, Shamali.
Okay. But that determination by which one holds fast to fruitive results in religion, economic development, and sense gratification is of the nature of passion, O Arjuna.
Makes sense.
So determination in the mode of passion is kind of like waiting for the fruits of your actions.
Yeah. Right. So you're just super zoned in on, it's good to be focused on what you're doing, but I think not get consumed by it. We know there's something greater. So I'm going to work, but it's not going to become my end all be all. Like these people in the mode of passion, they want the fruits of what they've done so much.
Yeah. And I think that's all of us a little bit too, you know, because it's like we watch Netflix to get some sort of sense of gratification. We go to work because we know we're going to get paid. And like, we still are living, and we have to live in the mode of passion to some degree to sustain ourselves, I think. And I feel like, but we can't be 100% greedy for the fruits of action.
I mean, if you,
do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. If you remember back many chapters, I don't remember which one, we were talking about how there's different times of days that have different modes, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The times of days in which you're supposed to go to work, it's mode of passion. Because you're meant to accomplish, you're meant to achieve, you're meant to do things. And so again, sometimes we'd like to criticize passion and ignorance because they're not as good as goodness.
Right.
But I think they're useful for their purpose. Now, this case, what we're saying is, if you understand bhakti yoga, you're not so stuck in the fruit of results. But I agree 100% with Shama Sangeeta, where literally society nowadays, at least in America, I mean, it might not be the same in other countries, but at least in America, is very results oriented. Yes. It's like, what did you accomplish? What did you achieve? Tell me about it consistently all the time in order to continue being chosen as an employee.
Yeah.
Right. So it's a challenge because it's what you're being demanded to do in society, if you are in the corporate world, if you are in those kinds of situations.
Yeah. Right. The way I interpreted the text was like, this was your nature most of the time, no? Because I agree it has a time and place for it. We all have it when we have to work and go out in the world. I mean, passion is there. If you have a job, it's going to be there. But I don't know, maybe I read the text more to be, I guess it doesn't have to be, but I read it in more like, this is someone's personality. They are always like a workaholic prototype, let's say.
And they're like really addicted to the fruits of their labor.
Right. Like they can't tune out of it versus, let's say, just someone who like, they tap into that mode because they have a 9-to-5 job, but then they go home and they disconnect. And like, you're going to be governed, like Priya said, by different modes at different times of the day. And that's just part of living in society sometimes.
I think it's talking about the determination part, not so much what you do. So it's like the determination to do this. So like your mindset, like what keeps you going every day is that you want to get the results.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's a personality trait. I can see what you're saying about a personality trait, but it's about like the determination aspect, not so much what you do. So it's not so much a person that goes 9-to-5, but more so a person that's I have to work 12 hours. I have to make this much. I have to, which again, it's not a bad thing. Because if you have to do, and then you offer all of these things to Krishna,
it
transforms. So again, it's not a judgment. There's people who are hustlers, who make tons of money, and then they just build temples and they do these and they help people. And it's not, right? It's complex.
Right.
Yeah, Buddha's passion is very layered.
It is layered.
It's very, very layered.
Brahma had to tap into mode of passion to create everything.
Yeah. All right. 35.
I don't remember who's reading.
Shama. I don't know.
Me?
Priya.
Okay. Priya.
Yep.
We're so on it today.
I know. Text 35. And that determination, which cannot go beyond dreaming, fearfulness, lamentation, moroseness, and illusion. Such unintelligent determination, O son of Pritha, is in the mode of darkness.
Ooh. So this is kind of saying, Krishna's kind of saying that the lack of any sort of determination is in the mode of darkness.
Ignorance. Right. Yeah. Like it's better to at least be that mode of passion worker.
Yeah. So this person is like constantly dreaming of all the things that they want to do, but they don't execute. Yeah. They're fearful, they're morose, and they're sad. And they live in this world of like what's in their head, actually.
Right. I also think they lament. So they're like the what ifs kind of people.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, if I had done that.
Yeah.
Or what if I failed?
If I had done this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or what if I fail? Maybe I shouldn't do
Maybe I shouldn't do anything at all.
Yes.
In the Purport, Prabhupada says, here, dream means too much sleep. So those who cannot avoid oversleeping, who cannot avoid the pride of enjoying material objects, who are always dreaming of lording it over the material world, and whose life, mind, and senses are thus engaged, are considered to have determination in the mode of ignorance. Mm.
So I guess it's better to do something than nothing at all.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, because again, I mean, how can you use mode of ignorance for Krishna's pleasure?
Right.
No, you cannot.
You can use the mode of passion for Krishna's pleasure.
Yeah.
You can
imagine
use
cooking 75 different things on that, you know, that day that we have to cook a bunch
yeah.
of things.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because you can just picture it in the simplest way. By doing nothing, you're not going to get anywhere. By moving things up, you might make mistakes along the way, but you're going to start growing. You got to move. You got to be in some action.
Yeah, for sure. So very interesting. Text 36.
Ooh.
Shama Sangeeta?
Yeah. Now we were just talking about determination. Now we're talking about happiness. Okay. Mm. Krishna says, oh, best of the Bharatas, now please hear from me about the three kinds of happiness by which the conditioned soul enjoys and by which he sometimes comes to the end of all distress.
Yeah.
Love
36,
this.
37, 38, and 39 are about sukha, fruit of action that is happiness.
Happiness.
You know, it caught my attention, the line in the purport where it says, you know, the conditioned soul, we try to enjoy happiness in this material world again and again. So we are chewing the chewed. And that's a phrase my spiritual master used to always say, that the material world is like chewing the chewed. I think it comes from, we've said before, from India, they would chew the bamboo shoot even beyond its sweetness. They would just keep chewing even when the sweetness is gone. Mm. So that's like the material world. And then he used to say, so the real adventure begins when we dive into spiritual life. Because if you think, everyone's thought bubbles are pretty similar, what we think of in life, what we want to achieve, it's just repetitive. But the real adventure starts when you open the curtain behind, let's dive into our spiritual path.
Love it. Yeah, it's true.
All right, next one, 37.
Can I give one more example?
Yes, yes, of course.
So I think the material world is like, I heard of this before, like happiness is like, in the material world, is like if you get hurt and you're in pain. So when they stop hurting you, it doesn't hurt anymore, and you think that's happiness.
Happiness is the absence of suffering,
basically. But in it's like temporary, and then you're gonna get hurt again. Yeah. It's like a temporary situation where you almost don't even know what real happiness is. You're just looking for moments of brief, like
relief.
Again, this is like dark, and it's also
no, it's true.
But it's true.
I mean,
but
it's true.
But also, like, it doesn't mean that you can live a very peaceful, Krishna conscious. Or spiritual life, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't. It's not all sadness and mystery. I feel like it sounds a little Debbie Downer, like there's no way to be happy. But in a general sense, true, there's no real way to be happy. Like, it's a roller coaster of emotions all day. Like, you're living a very unless you're very fortunate and your karma is almost done and you're about to get out of here, and then your life is very stable and you're just working towards Krishna.
It's impossible. The planets affect us. Even then,
look at the Pandavas. I mean, they suffered immensely, and I would say they were, you know, on another level. So it's not like look at someone suffering, it's not like, oh, they must have a long way to go. Look at the Pandavas. I mean,
yeah. Yeah. And then, like, look at spiritual masters and look at this
so
or that.
Much.
There's so many. It's hard for us to fully understand.
Yeah. Because it's so nuanced, karma.
But for sure. Okay.
All right. 37?
37.
Wow. We're just breezing by and it's making me like, whoa, we're getting to the end of the Gita.
I know, Shyamalu.
Okay. That which in the beginning may be just like poison, but at the end is just like nectar, and which awakens one to self-realization, is said to be happiness in the mode of goodness. Oh, ooh. This is interesting.
Yeah.
Should I read it one more time?
Yeah.
Sure.
That which in the beginning may be just like poison, but at the end is just like nectar, and which awakens one to self-realization, is said to be happiness in the mode of goodness.
Yeah, I've heard that analogy a lot. What does it make you guys feel, or what do you think about when you hear that?
Ooh, this is every type of spiritual activity I've ever done. Makes me feel like, but it's always so good,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's like waking up early to meditate in the morning is so difficult at first.
But then absolutely.
Those are the days that I cherish, you know? Like those are that inner peace that I get from the hardship of waking up early is like, it's like nothing. I feel untouchable. Like it's just incredible.
Like it makes that day better than any other day.
Yeah.
Right. And probably you have to, it's like kind of like as opposed to giving into whatever, watching more shows at night and then you feel that lethargy and then you wake up late, you gave into the senses, but you felt bad the next day.
Yeah.
So you had to be more disciplined, give up some enjoyment in order to feel better when you woke up early.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I looked up some other examples on ChatGPT for this verse where it's like studying hard for a test. It may feel burdensome initially, but bring success and confidence afterwards.
Nice.
Another one is forgiving someone. Emotionally tough in the beginning, but liberating in the long run.
Nice.
Yeah.
I have a question for you guys because I have a one-line summary of this and then it leads to kind of a question of how to traverse this phase. So someone summarized this as to endure phases of tastelessness in bhakti, treat it as a medicinal dose, and it will duly transform into a nectar drink. So the question would be how to, which I'm sure everyone, I know I felt it, how to endure a phase of tastelessness in bhakti when we just are doing and it's like, man, I'm not feeling the magic. I'm just doing it. And I think, I don't know if it was Prabhupada or where I heard that a devotee asked something like, the question, I totally forgot, but it was something like, what do we do, Prabhupada, when we're not feeling it or something like that? And he was, I think something like that. And Prabhupada said, like, most of the time you're not feeling it. It's rare when you are going to be feeling it.
Yeah.
So how to endure those phases of getting through the desert? Because that's where, for many people, that might be, if they're new, that might be where it ends their journey. Or for someone who's been in the game for a long time, it's hard to traverse that desert. How do we do it?
I think there's two answers. There's the tough love answer. There's the, you don't brush your teeth because it brings you joy.
Right.
Like,
no, but if someone is new to Krishna consciousness,
no, I'm
not
saying just for the new people. Yeah. I'm just saying like, there's two things. First of all, you do it even when you don't want to because you know it will bring you joy and pleasure.
You'll have teeth when you're older.
I thought you were about to say you'll have taste for the like lineage, you know, whatever.
You'll get to keep your teeth.
You have teeth. Okay, cool. I think it's really hard, but I think it's like muscle memory. You just keep going.
Right.
And then there's the sweeter answer. What would you say, Shama Sangeeta?
Oh,
I can come up with something.
Yeah, but if you can help
I think
with
you
that.
Should both say, like, this is a big topic where many people might feel down.
I think we've all even been in this place, right? Of like finding that the strength to go on sometimes, you know what I mean? And I think that like, I don't want to advocate for taking breaks, but like sometimes you need.
I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you need a little break, right? Like there are times where like, even after the passing of our friend, like that happened last year, right? Like I was not in a good place from a sadhana standpoint. Like I was not chanting. Mm. I was not doing all the things that I need to be doing because I was mad. I was angry. Mm. And I just needed time to just really just digest and sit with my feelings. And then I came back to Krishna with, after a few months with a renewed sense of spirituality and optimism, but I needed to take that time. And so I found my way back, but it was hard. It's those moments are hard.
I love that. And I think that's a very real thing that needs to be talked about because many times we don't want to air our, I wouldn't even really call it flaws because it's just very human and it's very, we're striving for like perfection here. Mm-hmm. And how many, I think is so universal feeling I just can't do this right now. I'm really trying here and that's okay.
Yeah.
Like, Krishna will still love us.
But one of the things that like got me to come back is like, I don't have an alternative, you know, like I don't believe in any other alternative that makes sense. You know, like Krishna is it for me. And I really believe that in my core. And I'm like, what am I going to do? Live without Krishna? No, I can't. So like sometimes, but that needs to be taken away or put on a break for you to appreciate that relationship too. It's kind of, absence makes the the heart grow fonder, right? Yeah.
I think that's true. And I think maybe that whatever thing is causing you overwhelm is the thing that needs to stop. But do not fully disconnect. I think that's the other part. Because I think it can, especially if you're at the beginning of your journey and it's starting to feel overwhelming. And maybe you're like, I can't chant. I can't go to the temple. It's too overwhelming. I can't do all of these things. Okay, hang out with one of your people that you feel close to every so often and still connect in real ways. It doesn't even have to be about Krishna necessarily. Give yourself the room, give yourself the space, but don't fully disconnect, because I do think that Maya is strong, material life is strong, and we can be like, no, I don't need any of this. And then it could take us a lot longer to come back because honestly, you're going to come back.
Yeah.
But it's just like,
it's a good point that you made where it's like, okay, if you can't chant, you can't go to temple, you can't do it, but do one thing that you enjoy.
Yeah.
Right. And don't give that up.
Yes.
Absolutely. You know? That's,
Another thing that I would say is find change, like look for change. Right? So maybe you're exhausted of the same thing every day. Maybe you cannot find the magic in there. Change it up a little bit, right? Maybe you try to join a japa group where everyone chants together. Maybe you, whatever it is, right? Like basically find other ways, but it's okay for you to take a break. I honestly think that this is a non-politically correct answer.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever heard anyone say that, but I would say that I've experienced it. I'm sure you've experienced it. I'm sure you've experienced it.
Yeah.
And if the three of us have experienced that, and I know for a fact that at least 90% of ISKCON has experienced this based on being in this movement for so long and people are not talking about it. There's someone out there that's being really hard on themselves and thinking that they're failing. And I'm just going to say to you, we are all failing together. And it's okay. It's okay. Like we keep going, right? Like it's there's ups and downs and then we just try not to give up. Like that's
absolutely,
you know?
And it's true. We've never, from a branding perspective, we've never labeled us ourselves as a politically correct podcast.
Right? Or experts in any way. We're just sharing our experiences and learning together.
Yeah. And I think that there's such an authenticity in that where it's like, I've never heard that from any other high up person in this movement to be like, okay, like life is crazy. You could take a little break. You know what I mean? And I think sometimes we just need that, but just keep one little string of connection to Krishna, whatever that service is that you enjoy doing, that you like doing. But it's real though. It's very authentic feedback.
I mean, there was some, this old woman in our sage group with my mom that was telling us how she's been really struggling chanting, but she's been so enjoying reading about Krishna's pastime. Mm-hmm. So there was this other senior devotee, I think it was Rukmini, that told her, oh, I'm not telling you not to chant, but just then do that. Then go with what feels good right now. Read. And what you were saying, Priya, about maintaining the connection, it reminded me how my spiritual master always said, if you're in a dry spell, then do something to change it up. If you love picking flowers for Krishna, go out and pick some flowers. Just make it a little something nice rather than like being a martyr to yourself. Try and chant, but like do something to change it up then.
Yeah, something different. I mean, there's so many ways to connect to Krishna. You can, if you're like into arts and crafts, make clothes for your deities, paint, like find the things that make you happy and try to connect a little Krishna with it, but don't make it a requirement or a must or whatever, so that you have the room to develop that attachment again or that desire again, because it is ups and downs, right?
So, I like that. You need to have the space, the room to come back to it.
Yeah. I think for me, like when I stopped chanting during that time, I was listening to Bhajans of Radharani because I was mad at Krishna and there are times that Radharani is mad at Krishna. And so I was just like, listen to
that's so
and
sweet.
That's literally the only thing I did. I didn't do anything else, but that was my one connection.
Mm, you know? Sweet.
That's sweet.
Yeah. You know, my dad, I called him on the phone. Of course, that's repetitive. Anyway, I called him on the way here and he said, you know, he was telling me how a lot of his god brothers and sisters and devotees who are older tend to sometimes feel, gosh, I've been in the game for how long now? And we read all these descriptions in the scriptures of them rolling around in ecstasy and crying from chanting. And he's like, you know, even on days where you feel like I did some really good rounds, you might measure yourself up to like what we read about. And it's like, well, man, I'm not feeling that magic. What am I doing wrong? Shouldn't I, you know, it can feel sometimes so hard to get there. Like I've been doing everything right. And he said, so a nice way sometimes to feel Krishna's love is not just in the feeling, because most days you won't feel it. Lucky the days you do feel it. But in the arrangements Krishna makes in your life, try to see his hand guiding you in your life. And you can take that as that's the proof of Krishna's presence in my mm-hmm. life, even when I'm not feeling it, because it's rare the time you feel it.
Anything else on this verse, guys?
What was the verse?
It was about things about poison in the beginning, nectar at the end, and that is happiness and the mode of goodness.
Yeah, mm. That's true.
I have just a couple more things to say about the Krishna and feeling his presence or not. One thing he had also shared that he asked TKG a question.
Was he?
Oh, my dad. My dad asked Tamal Krishna Goswami a question about, how do we do when we read about all these elevated stuff in the scriptures and we're not feeling it? And TKG says something really nice about oftentimes these elevated things we read, it stays in our subconscious, so that he's seen time and time again for many devotees, ordinary devotees, even not super elevated, pure devotees. For all of us, it comes together at the end and it flourishes at the end. So TKG saw many devotees who months before they passed away, they were all of a sudden having far out realizations and experiences, that it's kind of like, it's okay not to be feeling it throughout your whole life. You're just absorbing it and it'll all come together when the time is right, you know? So oftentimes that is at the end, all of these elevated stuff really flourish in your heart.
Mm. I wonder, here comes Priya.
Here comes Priya.
Sometimes I think like, do you both, how do I start this process?
That's the evil laugh there.
Do you both feel like you are looking for that magic? Like you do want to feel just like the previous acharyas, or like these, you know, other, you know, like the gopis or these people that were so connected to Krishna, that that's something that you're looking for?
Because
you were saying like, oh, you know, when sometimes we work our whole lives and we're not quite exhibiting the symptoms of like ecstasy and that kind of feeling. But once you get older, like that closer to death, then the realizations come in and you're feeling all of the things that maybe you didn't feel the rest of your life, kind of thing.
I see. Mm. So like, what is the expectation we have for our own level of feeling, let's say?
Yeah. Because I think about it, when I think about it, I'm like, I'm hoping I do good enough, and I'm hoping that Krishna's like, all right, you get out of here. But you know, if I'm not, then I'm like, okay, I guess I got more lessons to learn. And like, that's how my brain processes. And but it's so sweet that someone's like, I'm doing all the right things, but I'm not feeling the feelings and I want those. I'm just curious what you guys' mindsets are in terms of that.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm chasing that feeling of magic. It's nice when it comes along, but I don't know if I'm chasing it. I'm trying to do my duty, right? Mm-hmm. And trying to do the things that ought to be done, which are, you know, it's still based in love, but it's my duty to form a relationship with Krishna. And it is built on love. And and the magic moments do happen.
Yeah.
But they're not all the time, and I'm not expecting it. So I'm just grateful for when it does happen.
Yeah. I think when I say also magic, I don't necessarily think I'm going to roll on the floor with tears falling down. I just have had, when you get little tastes of little, I don't know, connection or what I'm calling magic, you get those and it feels so nice and you feel this presence, and it would be nice to feel that all the time, you know? So maybe, there's been days where you chant and it feels so dry, like, well, I chanted, check off the list, but what did I feel? Nothing. And those days are a little like, I like to feel something in my heart that feels like that beautiful connection. So I don't know if I necessarily, it's not like I'm thinking like, when will I fall to the floor rolling? Mm-hmm. But I like to feel something. Mm. So I would love to get to the point where it's all the time. I don't know if that'll happen, but that would be cool. That'd be cool.
Yeah. And just some advice for our listeners is like, sometimes some of us are so on screens and like, that's so much of our day. And I think the magic moments happens in the quiet, right?
Yeah.
And so if you can give yourself more opportunities for quiet moments, it'll also give yourself more opportunities for magic moments.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. To quiet it down and feel Krishna there. Because he's there. We just need to quiet things down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed.
All right. And that's all we have for this episode. Please join us next time for chapter 18, text number 38.
Mm. See you next time.
Bye. Hello, beautiful souls. If you like what you're hearing, please follow us on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast.
And if you love what you're hearing, please make sure to share a link to our podcast at Modern Yogi Podcast with all your friends, families, and long-lost cousins.
And if you have any questions at all, send us a DM on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast, and we'll be sure to get back to you.
Thank you for listening to
The Modern Yogi.